I don't know that it's necessary at all, but I say so in case some of you don't know me. I want to know you if we're not now friends and acquaintances. My name's Tom Lovern, and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, the help of hundreds of people like you, and as a partaker of the greatest of all blessings God's ever given to an alcoholic, I'm privileged to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have known our speaker for a number of years. Some years ago, I had the privilege of being with him on the platform in a program in Washington, D.C. And we talked tonight at dinner. And he said, before I could say it, what I wanted to say to him. He said, I remember the first few moments that we met together, and I fell in love with you, and I want to say to Chuck Chamberlain, I remember well the first moments I was with him, and I fell in love with him. I met him some years later, and not too long ago, over at Amarillo, Texas, and we talked about Blackstone. And we have been trying to make paths cross and arrangements fit so that we could have him come with his lovely wife, Elsa, whom you enjoyed so much today, that they might both share the richness of their lives with us. And I think it's a great privilege and an honor that is ours. Not because he is Chuck Chamberlain, but because he too has been so richly blessed in this God-given fellowship. And any time I find a man so blessed, I know he has something that can add to my blessing. And I anticipate this hour, even as you do. Chuck said a funny little thing today, being humorous. He said after this beautiful program the women did for us this morning, he said, you know something? Elsa has about put me out of the local scene. And my youngest son, Richard, has put me out of the international picture. And I am now practically a nobody. And I present to you, I think, the most glorious nobody I have ever known, Chuck Chamberlain.
Thank you, Tom. I think you should have said, however, Colonel Nobody. I am Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic. I think I would be remiss if I didn't start out by thanking Tom and Dutch and whoever else might have had anything to do with having Mr. C and I here. So far, this has been a fabulous experience. I could do without this part of it, all right, myself. But I have been repaid already many times for coming, and I am indeed grateful to you all for allowing us to be with you. Tom and his good wife have been very meaningful to me for a long time. And on this trip, I've added Dutch and his good wife
And I feel most blessed that I've been able to know them a little better. And I've added them to the first layer in my heart. There are many here who are more meaningful to me than I am. And if any of you should happen to get the idea before I sit down that I love this program and that I love its people, you're right. Seems the longer I'm around here, the more completely I become wrapped up in the people of our program. All things are good with us now. Everything that I know of in the area of our livingness is good. And yet I find myself more completely and totally dependent today than I have ever been in my lifetime. I find myself more in need of you, the peoples of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this program, and my God, than I have ever been. More even than 17 years ago when I came. Because, you know, when things are good with us, there is the great temptation to subconsciously or consciously reach for the wheel again, to become a little bit important to ourselves. And I find it much, much more necessary now that I spend my time in surrender than in the very beginning. Because in the beginning, if it had just been possible for me to die and have it over with, I would have been very grateful indeed. But now, I want to live. And it's more necessary that I remember why I am alive and from whence came this gift of life to me than it ever was before. Now, my dependence is not a dependence of fear. From the time I woke up to the fact that I was sober, 16 and a half years ago, 6 months after I got here, when I woke up to the fact that I was sober and had been from the very moment of surrender, from that time on, I haven't been afraid of anything. I haven't been afraid of me or you or life or death or God or the devil, or things present or things to come. And so this is not a dependence of fear. It's a dependence of absolute certainty that it's my business to walk in this way, and it's God's business to take care of it. And that's the way I live. That's the only way I know how to live. I can't run my life. I can't run my business. And as many of you probably noticed this afternoon,
I can't run my wife. And so it's quite wonderful to know that you don't have to. So again, it's a great joy for me to share this evening with you. And I'd like to just say a few little things before I get lost, which I probably will in a little while. A few little observations. You know, it makes very little difference what happens to you and me in this life. It is our reaction to what happens to us that makes the difference. This is a great thing to learn. It's not what happens, it's our reaction to what happens that makes the difference. Another little thing. That is very meaningful to me is that I am convinced now that people don't act like they act because they want to, but because they have to. And when you know that people don't act like they act because they want to, but because they have to, they can't hurt you. You see, we alcoholics are inclined to think that we have a corner on a person's mind. You know, we got a person's mind. But we don't give you all the, you normal people, you citizens. We don't very easily give you the right to have a place in the mind. But to come to see that this is true, and that people act like they act because they have to. I am convinced tonight that every person in the world is doing the best he can according to his light. That is according to his understanding. Every one of us doing the best we can according to our light. That is according to our understanding. And when we know this, it frees us up considerably. And we are not then dependent on the actions of others. But we are dependent only on our own reaction. It's a very freeing thing. Now, another little remark I'd like to make is that insofar as I am able to see, there is not one answer for me, an alcoholic, and another answer for you, a non-alcoholic. I believe that there is one answer, and it's just the same for me as it is for you, and for you as it is for me. It so happens that I can take no credit for having found that answer, because if it had been humanly possible for me to remain in left field, I would still be up there. I can't even take credit for deciding to come here, because I couldn't come until after I had lost the power of decision or choice.
My choice was never to come here. The idea of me coming to a bunch of drunks for help was obnoxious to me, to say the least. And yet I find many of you who didn't have my propulsion. Choosing this way of life and finding the same answers that we find. And it's a very wonderful thing, and I most certainly want to express my gratitude and love for the program of Al-Anon. I think in many ways they're doing more with our program than many of us. Because in many instances we come here looking for sobriety and get sober and think we have it made. And when we get rid of the bottle, we forget then that we have to get rid of ourselves and our problems, personal problems, in order to stay rid of the bottle. And we don't do the things that the program suggests that allow us to live in sobriety. And the Al-Anon comes here without the necessity of the bottle or the excuse of the bottle, and immediately they start doing the things that you and I are supposed to do to clean up themselves, and they do a whale of a job with it. And in many areas they're doing a better job than we are. And so I salute them. And lastly, I believe in every man's religion for him, and nobody's religion but my very own for myself. And I have to call them as I see them. I am pretty sure that when one has found himself and his brother and his God, that he can see that all ways are good. But no particular way is necessary. All ways are good, but no particular way is necessary. Now, I am not a priest or a preacher or a rabbi. And I am not frustrated by that fact. I am not a doctor or a psychiatrist, and I am not frustrated by that fact. I am an alcoholic. And I am no longer frustrated by that fact. That's the way it is with me. I am an alcoholic. And I have found my own peace in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love it, and I admit prejudice. But you see, Alcoholics Anonymous is not the thing. It also is a way. This is the way, not the thing. And we must never get it in our head that Alcoholics Anonymous is the thing. Some of these days there might not even be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Now there's a little poem that I love very, very much. the verse in In Memoriam, I believe. It says, Earth's little systems have their day. They have their day and cease to be. They are but broken lights of thee, but thou, O God, are more than they. And so it is that it is not the system. And it is not an individual in the system or out of it that brings about this change. It's the individual fulfilling the conditions of the system. Now to date, Alcoholics Anonymous is the finest system that has ever been created for the likes of me. But nobody can fulfill its conditions for me but myself. Now we might look at ourselves a little bit and say to ourselves, who might be subject to the disease of alcoholism? Would it be just those who are physically weak? And I've looked around a great deal since I've been here. And I think there are more big men physically in this group than any like number I've ever seen. There's some of the biggest men around here I've saw. And some of them look pretty tough. But you know, the whole bunch of us combined can't handle 1 ounce of alcohol. I have a friend at home that not too many years back was an All-American football player, USC. And right now you take hold of a man's arm and it's like taking hold of a steel post. He can't handle 1 ounce of alcohol. We have world champions in here. And they can't handle alcohol. So we would have to say to ourselves very quickly, it's not just those who are physically weak. And then we might say to ourselves, well, would it be just those who are mentally weak? And we'd have to quick rule that out because we're here, aren't we? But besides us, you know, there are some pretty smart cookies in this fellowship. Doctors, lawyers, professors, big people in the world of business. I was jagging a meeting here just the other night at home, and the guy that was leading the meeting had a Phi Beta Kappa key hanging on. And he had PhD after his name, and he's a professor in one of our local universities, and he is recognized as a world scholar. And he was leading the meeting not by proxy. He belongs here. So we'd have to say no, it wouldn't be just those who are mentally weak. And then we might say to ourselves, well, would it just be those who are entirely without spiritual or religious background? And we'd have to quick rule that out. I think there is not a like number of people in any segment of human society as we have in Alcoholics Anonymous that would contain so many sons and daughters of preachers. Men and women who have studied for the priesthood or the ministry, or priests and ministers, as our society has. The woods is just full of them, present company excepted. So we couldn't say that it's just those who are without a religious or spiritual understanding of any kind. And then we'd have to say to ourselves, well, does alcohol alone cause alcoholism? And we'd have to quickly rule that out. Because, you see, there are thousands of good Saturday night drunks who are not alcoholic at all. Those who seem to know tell me that not more than 10% of those on the skid rows of our country are alcoholics. They're just good old Saturday night drunks. I have had drinking partners who could get just as drunk as I did, and who did things that I never did, like coming home and cleaning out the house, you know, beating their wives up, their kids. I never did that in my life. It was the other way around in my family. I know a lot of you alcoholic men sort of mooning over that pretty thing that was up here this afternoon and made that talk, you know. Let me tell you something. She used to beat me till the arms were black to the elbows. And I never hit her in my life. Why, I'll never know. God knows she needed it. But I've known many who could clean out the house and wake up the next morning, shake their head, and say, oh, I got drunk last night, didn't I? They go ahead about their business, and they don't get any worse, and they don't get any better. They are not alcoholics. So we'd have to rule out the fact that alcohol alone causes alcoholism. Because if alcohol alone caused alcoholism, every excessive drinker would be an alcoholic. But this is not the case. So we'd pretty nearly have to conclude that alcohol plus a spiritual, mental, and physical complex that is right for it causes alcoholism. It is not alcohol alone that causes alcoholism. Now, I am an alcoholic. I cannot live and drink. And of myself, I can't keep from drinking. Why am I not drunk tonight? I'm 3,000 miles away from home. And it's Saturday. And what better day is there to be drunk than Saturday when it's Saturday? Not normal for an alcoholic to be sober, particularly under these circumstances. Why am I not drunk tonight? Because something has happened. I have the thing that I was looking for in the bottle. I have the thing that I was looking for in the bottle. I've got the thing. Now, what is the thing? It's a state of being. It's a state of being. There is nothing that a drink of liquor or a sedating or tranquilizing pill could do for me but tear me down. And therefore, there is no need to drink. The need is gone. Why was I drunk 20 years ago tonight? I'm sure I was. Because of a state of being. Because of a state of being. A state of being that was so lousy that I had to get drunk in order to get rid of the hurt. So, I am sober because of a state of being, and I was drunk because of a state of being. I had to drink. To get rid of me, to get rid of that hurt. And as bad as was the physical torture, and as bad as was the mental anguish, there was a hurt that far exceeded them both. And that was the hurt in the very middle of my being. That came from the sickness of the soul. The knowledge that I was losing the battle of life. The knowledge that people whom to me were most certainly not my equal in ability, they were passing me up on the high road of life. And I didn't know why. And I hurt. And I had no answers for me. And I hurt. And I had to get drunk. Now something has happened. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. That's what we're going to talk about, the problem and the answer, as I see it. Alcohol is no problem to me when I found it. It was an answer. I have 17 years and 2.5 months to look back over without one conscious desire to drink. 17 years and 2.5 months. Not one conscious and sharp drink and all that stuff. 25 years of drinking. And the time before that. And in looking over it, I see that I was forever a rebel. I was born that way. And when I found alcohol, it was no problem. I already was my problem. And alcohol was my answer. And it was an answer for a long time. It wasn't any problem. I got drunk when I wanted to. And when I didn't want to, I didn't get drunk. But it did something for me that was very wonderful, something that I needed to have done. It allowed me, number one, to live in my own world. And number two, it took the hurt out of the world around me. Because of my very nature, I was a misfit. And I couldn't integrate myself into the life around me. Because I didn't like it. And when I had a few drinks, it made it possible for me to live with you without hurting too bad. And for 15 years, I drank that way. And alcohol was not the problem, it was the answer. And after 15 years of drinking, the answer became the problem. Because, you see, it wasn't the right answer in the first place. And it became the problem, and I didn't then know why. All of a sudden, I was not drinking according to my pattern. And I had a pattern for everything. I did everything according to a code. And I had a code for drinking. And all of a sudden, I'm not drinking according to my code, and I don't know why. But thinking it's a personal weakness, a weakness in me, that I had to overcome, I started working on that weakness, that problem. And I worked on it for the next 10 years. And the harder I worked, the worse it got. And the worse it got, the harder I worked. Now, I did not think that total abstinence was the way out. Any weakling could quit drinking. Ha! But it took a pretty good boy to beat it in his own game. And I set about to beat it. And I was still saying for 2 years after everybody quit listening to me, I'll beat this thing. It's the last thing I ever do. And it came that close to being the last thing I ever did. I believe I'm safe in saying that in the last 5 years of my drinking, 90% of my waking time was spent on the problem. Yeah. I had to win. I became a periodic when I discovered that I was in trouble. Just because I had to win. And you can't fight a very good battle when you're down on your back. And so I had to get sober and get well and get strong in order to get back in the ring. I had lost a round, but I wasn't going to lose the fight. I had a great system. I ate well and slept well and drank milk and ate vitamins and exercised. And in the latter years, I added psychology and religion. I prepared on three fronts. And when I had done all my analyzing and I knew where I had made my mistake and had decided not to do it that way anymore, I would then start sampling very delicately and sample myself right on back to bed again. Now, in those last years, I tried to find an answer. I went to men of the cloth. I went to doctors and people that know more psychiatry than there was. Really. And they couldn't help me because they didn't know the nature of my problem. Every one of them talked to me about willpower, backbone, standing up and being a man. And I was sure there was nothing wrong with my willpower or my backbone or the standing up and being a man department. I had made my own way since I was 13. And I'd been quite an athlete in my day, and I'd done pretty good until I got lost in alcohol. And I was rather proud of my backbone. It had never bothered me. My willpower was par excellence. I could get liquor in Kansas on election day if it fell on Sunday. And it depended only on how high I was bouncing, how long it took. If I was well up off the sidewalk, just a few minutes, and I could have it jug in any town in the United States. So my willpower was all right. My won't power might have been just a little deficient. I don't know. And in the standing up and being a man department, I'd have given them cards and spades. See, I'd been a system man for years. I was hunting something, and I hunted every place. I thought one of the systems, or one of the proponents of one of the systems, would do this thing for me. And I went through them one after another. When I'd go through a system and didn't have the answer, I'd get me another system. And I became very proficient in the system. I was the guy that explained Catholicism to the Catholics, Judaism to the Jews, and Mohammedism to the Mohammedans. I wasn't known as a drunken deacon for 10 years for nothing. I'll tell you that. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with the standing up and being a man department. So I could get no help from them. And I couldn't help myself because I didn't know the nature of my problem. And I had to run out of everything. I had to run out of people, places, things, health, sanity, money, and liquor all at once. And when there was no place else to go, I came here and found out what was wrong with me in the first place. You people told me why I couldn't drink like other people, and this is a thing that's been driving me nuts for years. People whom I recognized as my inferiors, both mentally and physically, and spiritually, if you will, could drink that stuff and didn't bother. And I was always getting in trouble. And they were telling me, Chuck, you can't drink, you gotta quit. And I'd say to me, why can't I drink? He does. The fifth squeak. And my answer to me was, you can and you gotta prove it. And there I was trying to prove it for 10 years after the law, and not knowing that no one had ever won the battle. But I came here and you told me why. Why can't I drink successfully? Because I'm an alcoholic. What is an alcoholic? A person who suffers with the disease of alcoholism. I never heard that word until I got here. In my day, they didn't know. Thank God many preachers, priests, doctors, psychiatrists, and lay people know the nature of our problem now, and they can tell us and tell us where we can go for help. But in my day, this was not true. So I had to drink the last dregs out of the bottom of the cup and come here, and you told me. And I have remained to find that, medically speaking, alcoholism is the third worst killer in the country today, topped only by heart and cancer. And incidentally, running around this country, in Canada as I have in the last 10 years, I have talked with many doctors who have researched this thing for years. And they say that it is their private opinion that if the brain explosions and heart failures that should be attributed to alcoholism were, right now, it would be number one as a killer in the United States. I just bring that point in. I don't think it's important. Whether we're first or third, we get show money anyhow, don't we? It's second to one of our social diseases as a cause for permanent insanity. And medically speaking, it's incurable, and that's what I got. I'm an alcoholic. Pretty rough. Very, very serious deal. It's a matter of life and death. And that's what I got. I'm an alcoholic. Now, medically, they define the disease as a disease of a twofold nature. An allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. Both mental and physical. An allergy of the body physical. Obsession of the mind mental. The reason I can't drink like the normal drinker is because I'm not like him. I'm different, both mentally and physically. Now, this is a good thing to know. I never knew this, did you people told me? It's a good thing to know. The allergy of the body means simply this, that my body cannot successfully handle alcohol. I can't oxidize it, burn it up, and get rid of it. When I take a slug of liquor, one slug, I retain it. It goes into the bloodstream of the brain. And it triggers a physical demand that makes me keep on drinking until my cycle is run. This is not true with over 90% of those who drink liquor. It's only true people like me. Different. Now don't ask yourself what that physical difference is. Because there isn't a doctor on earth that knows. Even after 35 years of research, there's not a one in the world that knows. I read some funny ones. Some doc down here in Texas came out here last summer, I think it was, with the great and profound conclusion that if we just drink lots of sauerkraut juice, we'd be in like Flint. That is pure alcoholism, sauerkraut juice. Well, I drank enough sauerkraut juice trying to get over a hangover to float this building on down to the Pacific Ocean. It never even cured a hangover. Don't spend any time on what the physical difference is. You either got it or you ain't. Nobody knows, so we don't spend any time on that. But the things we do need to spend some time on. Number one, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Now I say that in face of the fact that I read that the Harper's Magazine article. I read it. And they mentioned something that might be a little different from that statement, but I didn't see it. I haven't seen anybody yet. All that I have seen who were alcoholics, who tried to become unalcoholic, came unglued. So from my experience over 17 years, I say once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. That's very important to us because it's so easy after one gets physically sober and gets the wrinkles out of their tummy and a little money in their pocket to think, well, I've built me up some good drinking time. You know? There's no such thing as the likes of me building up any good drinking time. Now, there's another thing that you and I must keep forever uppermost in our consciousness. And that is the physical side of the disease gets worse with the passage of time, even when we ain't doing it. This is the only disease I've ever known that gets worse when you ain't doing it. But even during long, extended periods of total abstinence, we get less able to react normally to alcohol. I am 17 years worse off, so far as successfully drinking is concerned, than I was when I crawled in here. And I know it. Because I have been active in this program for 17 years. And when you're active, you can't forget it because your friends are forever proving it for you. One of the greatest arguments in favor of staying close to and active in this program is just this. You can never forget it. That the physical part of the disease gets worse with the passage of time when you're active. The worst heartbreak that we ever have to go through is to sit in the dark room with that man or that woman who's had up to 20 years. Who forgot? It's a heartbreak. But it never lets you forget that the physical part of the disease gets worse with the passage of time. Many of you have heard Kate, and some of you have heard the man that came to this program with me January 1946. And for 15 straight years, did a wonderful job in our program. Probably the finest speaker that ever came out of our part of the country. Dear man, 2 years ago Christmas, he got messing with that up again for some reason. He didn't last 2 months. We had to bury him within 2 months after 15 straight years. Up to last week. And so it is that we've had to watch a few of them die. But we're not concerned with trying to tie ourselves out to see if we're more allergic than we were 17 years ago when you go through a few of those. Now, lastly, there's no cure for the body. If we had all the money in the state, it wouldn't be enough to send me someplace and get a cure for my body. There is no such cure. So what are we going to do about it? We are going to accept the fact I am. That I am physically different. That I don't have any more good drinking time left and never will. And there is nothing I can do about it, period. Now, if seeing this, we could decide to quit drinking and quit, we wouldn't have a problem in the world. It's a simple thing for an alcoholic to see the first slug that starts the drunk. After it's explained to them. I could see it so quickly when they told me. It never occurred to me it was the first slug. I thought it was the last gallon. And that's what I was working on, to cut it off before the trouble started. But when you people told me it was the first slug that started the drunk. Not that I got drunk every time I took a drink, because I didn't. I was cute. I was real cute. But it means that when we take a drink, we get drunk before we quit taking a drink. That's all it means. And if seeing this, we could just decide to quit and quit, we wouldn't have a problem, because it's so easy to see. But this is impossible. Why? Because the other half of the disease, the obsessions of the mind, that cause us to drink. You see, there's no physical demand for liquor when the body's dry. So why would I be in bad shape tonight? I don't hurt anything. The first drink is mental. The second drink and the 542nd drink are physical, but the first one is mental. And if you and I, being alcoholic, want to get rid of the bottle, we must be rid of the mental obsession that causes us to drink. It's just as silly for an alcoholic to decide to quit drinking as it is for a tubercular to decide to quit coughing. Tuberculars, to be rid of the coffee, has got to be rid of the disease. And if I'm to be rid of the bottle, I must be rid of the mental obsession that caused me to drink. You see, that's the reason you never hear anything about willpower here. Because we know that the obsessions of the mind are greater than the willpower. We read a little spa out there in our country for lady alcoholics. It's a sort of detention place. They keep you in there without your permission, you know. Penal in nature. And they don't get liquor in there very easy. You know, they don't get much liquor in there. And here about 3 or 4 weeks ago, a bunch of these gals found some lacquer thinner. Pretty high percentage of alcohol. And they decided it was time. They forgot to run it through the loaf of bread. But they did take precautions. They mixed it with milk. Remember when you used to use a half cup of cream before you went out to drink? Then you even got so you ate a half a pound of butter. And then you changed the olive oil. Because somebody said that you wouldn't, you know. So they took the precaution of putting it in milk and orange juice. And they got quite a buzz on for a little while. But 27 of them went to the hospital and 2 of them died. Mental obsession. We got to be rid of them. And how are we going to do it? Well, the book says that we got to get a little help from power greater than itself. Lack of power was our dilemma, says the book. And if we don't have the power, we got to find one. And it's obvious that it's got to be a power greater than itself. This I believe as I believe I'm here. For just a simple reason. If I could have stayed sober, I wouldn't believe it. I could not stay sober, therefore I believe it. I lack the power. Where was the power when I was waking up in jail? You know something? I never got to the place where I was comfortable in jail. Ha! I didn't like it in jail. And yet many of my friends thought I was real comfortable down there because I was there so often. I didn't like it. But there I was. I lacked the power. Where was the power when I was writhing in the floor, chewing my tongue full of holes and babbling like an idiot in an alcoholic fit? Uh-oh, there's a retreat. Alcoholic convulsion! Sounds better.